longer be as frightened by them. When you open to the totality of your being, you no longer have to pretend that your life is perfect or even hope that it will be. Instead, you can accept yourself as you are right now. When you acknowledge the less than perfect parts of yourself, something magical begins to happen. Along with the negative, you'll also begin to notice the positive, the wonderful aspects of yourself that you may not have given yourself credit for, or perhaps even been aware of. You'll notice that while you may, at times, act with self-interest in mind, at other times, you're incredibly selfless. Sometimes you may act insecure or frightened, but most often you are courageous. While you can certainly get uptight, you can also be quite relaxed. Opening to the totality of your being is like saying to yourself, "I may not be perfect, but I'm okay just the way I am." When negative characteristics arise, you can begin to recognize them as part of a bigger picture. Rather than judging and evaluating yourself simply because you're human, see if you can treat yourself with loving kindness and great acceptance. You may indeed be the whole catastrophe, but you can relax about it. So are the rest of us.
Cut yourself some slack.
Each of the strategies in this audiobook is geared toward helping you become more relaxed, peaceful, and loving. One of the most important pieces of this puzzle, however, is to remember that your goal is to stay relaxed, to not get too worked up or concerned about how you are doing. Practice the strategies, keep them in mind, yet don't worry about being perfect. Cut yourself some slack. There will be many times when you lose it, when you revert to being uptight, frustrated, stressed, and reactive. Get used to it. When you do, it's okay. Life is a process, just one thing after another. When you lose it, just start again. One of the most common mistakes I see when people are attempting to become more inwardly peaceful is that they become frustrated by little setbacks. An alternative is to see your mistakes as learning opportunities, ways to navigate your growth and perspective. Say to yourself, "Whoops, I lost it again. Oh well, next time I'll handle it differently." Over time, you'll notice drastic changes in your responses to life, but it won't happen all at once. I once heard of a proposed book title that sums up the message of this strategy. "I'm not okay, you're not okay, and that's okay." Give yourself a break. No one is going to bat 100% or even close to it. All that's important is that, generally speaking, you are doing your best and that you are moving in the right direction. When you can learn to keep your perspective and to stay loving toward yourself, even when you prove you are human, you'll be well on your way to a happier life.
Stop blaming others.
When something doesn't meet our expectations, many of us operate with the assumption, when in doubt, it must be someone else's fault. You can see this assumption in action almost everywhere you look. Something is missing, so someone else must have moved it. The car isn't working right, so the mechanic must have repaired it incorrectly. Your expenses exceed your income, so your spouse must be spending too much money. The house is a mess, so you must be the only person doing your part. A project is late, so your colleagues at work must not have done their share. And on it goes. This type of blaming thinking has become extremely common in our culture. On a personal level, it has led us to believe that we are never completely responsible for our own actions, problems, or happiness. On a societal level, it has led to frivolous lawsuits and ridiculous excuses that get criminals off the hook. When we are in the habit of blaming others, we will blame others for our anger, frustration, depression, stress, and unhappiness. In terms of personal happiness, you cannot be peaceful while at the same time blaming others. Surely there are times when other people and/or circumstances contribute to our problems, but it is we who must rise to the occasion and take responsibility for our own happiness. Circumstances don't make a person, they reveal him or her. As an experiment, notice what happens when you stop blaming others for anything and everything in your life. This doesn't mean you don't hold people accountable for their actions, but that you hold yourself accountable for your own happiness and for your reactions to other people and the circumstances around you. When the house is a mess, rather than assuming you're the only person doing your part, clean it up. When you're over budget, figure out where you can spend less money. Most important, when you're unhappy, remind yourself that only you can make yourself happy. Blaming others takes an enormous amount of mental energy. It's a drag-me-down mindset that creates stress and disease. Blaming makes you feel powerless over your own life because your happiness is contingent on the actions and behavior of others, which you can't control. When you stop blaming others, you will regain your sense of personal power. You will see yourself as a choice maker. You will know that when you are upset, you are playing a key role in the creation of your own feelings. This means that you can also play a key role in creating new, more positive feelings. Life is a great deal more fun and much easier to manage when you stop blaming others. Give it a try and see what happens.
Become an early riser.
I have seen this simple, practical strategy help many people discover a more peaceful, even a more meaningful life. So many people wake up, rush to get ready, grab a cup of coffee, and charge out the door to work. After working all day, they return home tired. The same is usually true for men and women who stay at home with their children. They get up just in time to start doing things for the kids. There is virtually no time for anything else. Whether you work, raise a family, or both, for the most part, you are too tired to enjoy any time left for you. As a solution to the tiredness, the assumption is often made, I'd better get as much sleep as I can. So your free time is spent sleeping. For many people, this creates a deep longing in the heart. Surely there must be more to life than work, children, and sleep. Another way of looking at your fatigue is to consider that a lack of fulfillment and a sense of being overwhelmed both contribute to your tiredness. And, contrary to popular logic, a little less sleep and a little more time for you might be just what you need to combat your sense of fatigue. An hour or two that is reserved just for you before your day begins is an incredible way to improve your life. I usually get up between 3 and 4 in the morning. After a quiet cup of coffee, I usually spend some time doing yoga and a few minutes of meditation. After that, I will usually go upstairs and write for a while, but I also have time to read a chapter or two in whatever book I'm enjoying. Sometimes, I'll just sit for a few minutes and do nothing. Virtually every day, I stop whatever I'm doing to enjoy the sunrise as it comes up over the mountain. The phone never rings, no one is asking me to do anything for them, and there is nothing I absolutely have to do. It's by far the most quiet time of the day. By the time my wife and children wake up, I feel as though I've had a full day of enjoyment. No matter how busy I am that day, or whatever demands there are on my time, I know I've had my time. I never feel ripped off, as so many people unfortunately do, as if my life isn't my own. I believe this makes me more available for my wife and children, as well as my clients at work and other people who depend on me. Many people have told me that this one shift in their routine was the single most important change they have ever made in their lives. For the first time ever, they're able to participate in those quiet activities they never found the time to do. All of a sudden, the books are getting read, the meditation gets done, the sunrise is appreciated. The fulfillment you experience more than makes up for any sleep you miss out on. If you must, turn off the television at night and get to sleep an hour or two earlier.
When trying to be helpful, focus on little things.
Mother Teresa once said, "We cannot do great things on this earth. We can only do little things with great love." Sometimes our grandiose plans to do great things at some later time interfere with our chances to do little things right now. A friend once told me, "I want my life to be about service, but I can't do anything yet. Someday, when I'm really successful, I'll do lots of things for others." Meanwhile, there are hungry people in the streets, elderly people who could use some company, mothers who need help with their children, people who can't read, neighbors whose homes need paint, streets with litter, people who need to be listened to, and thousands of other little things that need to be done. Mother Teresa was right. We can't change the world. But to make the world a brighter place, we don't need to. All we really have to do is focus on those little acts of kindness, things we can do right now. My favorite ways to be of service are to develop my own helping rituals and to practice random acts of kindness, almost always little things that give me enormous satisfaction and peace of mind. Often, the most appreciated acts of kindness aren't the million-dollar grants from giant corporations, but the 1 hour of volunteer work in a home for the elderly or the $5 gift from someone who can't afford anything at all. If we focus on how little difference our acts of kindness really make in the scheme of things, surely we will end up frustrated and will probably use our hopelessness as an excuse to do nothing. If, however, we take great care in doing something, anything, we will feel the joy of giving and will help make our world just a little bit brighter.
Remember, 100 years from now, all new people.
My good friend Patty recently shared this bit of wisdom with me that she learned from one of her favorite authors. It has added a great deal of perspective to my life. In the scheme of things, 100 years isn't all that long a time. However, one thing's for sure. 100 years from now, we will all be gone from this planet. And when kept in mind, this idea can fill us with needed perspective during times of perceived crisis or stress. If you have a flat tire or lock yourself out of your house, what's it going to mean 100 years from now? How about if someone acted unkindly toward you, or if you had to stay up most of the night working? What if your house didn't get cleaned or your computer breaks down? Suppose you can't afford to go on a much-needed vacation, buy a new car, or move to a larger apartment. All of these things, and most others, are brought into a deeper perspective when looked at with a 100-year view. Just this morning, I found myself at a mental fork in the road, about to get uptight about a mini-crisis at work. There was a double booking and two people showed up at the same time for the same appointment. What saved me from getting overly stressed and too uptight was remembering that 100 years from now, no one will remember this moment. No one will care. I calmly took responsibility for the error, and one of the people was happy to reschedule. As usual, this was small stuff that could easily have been turned into big stuff.
Lighten up.
These days, it seems that almost all of us are too serious. My older daughter often says to me, "Daddy, you've got that serious look again." Even those of us who are committed to non-seriousness are probably too serious. People are frustrated and uptight about virtually everything: being 5 minutes late, having someone else show up 5 minutes late, being stuck in traffic, witnessing somebody look at us wrong or say the wrong thing, paying bills, waiting in line, overcooking a meal, making an honest mistake, you name it. We all lose perspective over it. The root of being uptight is our unwillingness to accept life as being different in any way from our expectations. Very simply, we want things to be a certain way, but they're not a certain way. Life is simply as it is. Perhaps Benjamin Franklin said it best. our limited perspective, our hopes and fears become our measure of life. And when circumstances don't fit our ideas, they become our difficulties. We spend our lives wanting things, people, and events to be just as we want them to be, and when they're not, we fight and we suffer. The first step in recovering from over-seriousness is to admit that you have a problem. You have to want to change, to become more easygoing. You have to see that your own uptightness is largely of your own creation. It's composed of the way you have set up your life and the way you react to it. The next step is to understand the link between your expectations and your frustration level. Whenever you expect something to be a certain way, and it isn't, you're upset and you suffer. On the other hand, when you let go of your expectations, when you accept life as it is, you're free. To hold on is to be serious and uptight. To let go is to lighten up. A good exercise is to try to approach a single day without expectations. Don't expect people to be friendly. When they're not, you won't be surprised or bothered. If they are, you'll be delighted. Don't expect your day to be problem-free. Instead, as problems come up, say to yourself, "Ah, another hurdle to overcome." As you approach your day in this manner, you'll notice how graceful life can be. Rather than fighting against life, you'll be dancing with it. Pretty soon, with practice, you'll lighten up your entire life. And when you lighten up, life is a lot more fun.
Nurture a plant.
At first glance, this may seem like a strange or superficial suggestion. What good could it possibly do to nurture a plant? One of the goals of spiritual life, and one of the requirements of inner peace, is to learn to love unconditionally. The problem is, it's really hard to love a person, any person, unconditionally. The person we are trying to love inevitably says or does the wrong thing, or fails to meet our expectations in some way. So, we get upset and put conditions on our love. I love you, but you have to change. You must act the way I want you to act. Some people are better at loving their pets than the people in their lives. But to love a pet unconditionally is hard, too. What happens when your dog wakes you up with unnecessary barking in the middle of the night or ruins your favorite carpet with an accident? Do you love him just as much? My children have a bunny. It was really hard to love that bunny when he chewed a hole in my beautifully crafted wooden gate. A plant, however, is easy to love just the way it is. Therefore, nurturing a plant offers us an excellent opportunity to practice unconditional love. Why does virtually every spiritual tradition advocate unconditional love? Because love has such transformational power. Unconditional love brings forth peaceful feelings in both the giver and the receiver. Select a plant, indoor or outdoor, that you will see every day. Practice taking care of and loving that plant as if it were your baby. It's easier to care for your plant than your baby. No sleepless nights, no diapers, no crying. Talk to your plant. Tell it how much you love it. Love your plant whether it blooms or not, whether it lives or dies. Just love it. Notice how you feel as you offer this plant your unconditional love. When you offer this type of love, you're never agitated, irritated, or hurried. You're simply in a loving space. Practice this type of love each time you see your plant, at least once a day. After a short while, you'll be able to extend your loving kindness beyond your plant as well. As you notice how good it feels to love, see if you can offer a similar love to the people in your life. Practice not needing them to change or be different to receive your love. Love them just the way they are. Your plant can be a wonderful teacher, showing you the power of love.
Transform your relationship to your problems.
Obstacles and problems are a part of life. True happiness comes not when we get rid of all of our problems, but when we change our relationship to them. When we see our problems as a potential source of awakening, opportunities to practice patience, and to learn. Perhaps the most basic principle of spiritual life is that our problems are the best places to practice keeping our hearts open. Certainly, some problems need to be solved. Many others, however, are problems we create for ourselves by struggling to make our life different than it actually is. Inner peace is accomplished by understanding and accepting the inevitable contradictions of life, the pain and pleasure, success and failure, joy and sorrow, births and deaths. Problems can teach us to be gracious, humble, and patient. In the Buddhist tradition, difficulties are considered to be so important to a life of growth and peace that a Tibetan prayer actually asks for them. It says, "Grant that I may be given appropriate difficulties and sufferings on this journey so that my heart may be truly awakened and my practice of liberation and universal compassion may be truly fulfilled." It is felt that when life is too easy, there are fewer opportunities for genuine growth. I wouldn't go so far as to recommend that you seek out problems. I would, however, suggest that if you spend less time running away from problems and trying to rid yourself of them, and more time accepting problems as an inevitable, natural, even important part of life, you will soon discover that life can be more of a dance and less of a battle. This philosophy of acceptance is the root of going with the flow.
The next time you find yourself in an argument, rather than defend your position, see if you can see the other point of view first.
It's interesting to consider that when you disagree with someone, the person you are disagreeing with is every bit as certain of his or her position as you are of yours. Yet we always take sides, ours. This is our ego's way of refusing to learn anything new. It's also a habit that creates a lot of unnecessary stress. The first time I consciously tried the strategy of seeing the other point of view first, I found out something truly wonderful. It didn't hurt, and it brought me closer to the person with whom I was disagreeing. Suppose a friend says to you, "Liberals, or conservatives, are the major cause of our social problems." Rather than automatically defending your own position, whatever it is, see if you can learn something new. Say to your friend, "Tell me why you think that's true." Don't say this with a hidden agenda or in preparation to defend or prove your position, but simply to learn a different point of view. Don't try to correct or make your friend see how he is wrong. Let your friend have the satisfaction of being right. Practice being a good listener. Contrary to popular belief, this attitude does not make you weak. It doesn't mean you aren't passionate about your beliefs or that you're admitting that you're wrong. You're simply trying to see another point of view. You're seeking first to understand. It takes enormous energy to constantly prove a rigid position. On the other hand, it takes no energy to allow someone else to be right. In fact, it's outright energizing. When you understand other positions and points of view, several wonderful things begin to happen. First, you often learn something new. You expand your horizons. Second, when the person you are talking to feels listened to, he or she will appreciate and respect you far more than when you habitually jump in with your own position. Jumping in only makes him or her more determined and defensive. Almost always, if you are softer, the other person will be softer too. It might not happen right away, but in time it will. By seeking first to understand, you are putting your love and respect for the person to whom you are speaking above your need to be right. You are practicing a form of unconditional love. A side benefit is that the person you are speaking to may even listen to your point of view. While there is no guarantee that he will listen to you, one thing is guaranteed. If you don't listen, he or she won't. By being the first person to reach out and listen, you stop the spiral of stubbornness.
Redefine a meaningful accomplishment.
Sometimes it's easy to get carried away with our so-called accomplishments. We spend our lifetimes collecting achievements, earning praise and recognition, and seeking approval, so much so that we lose sight of what is truly meaningful. If you ask the average person, as I have done many times, what is a meaningful accomplishment? The typical responses will be things like achieving a long-term goal, earning lots of money, winning a game, getting a promotion, being the best, earning praise, and so forth. The emphasis is almost always on the external aspects of life, things that happen outside of ourselves. Certainly, there is nothing wrong with these types of accomplishments. They are a way of keeping score and improving our circumstances. They are not, however, the most important types of accomplishments if your primary goal is one of happiness and inner peace. Seeing your photograph in the local newspaper may be a nice thing to achieve, but isn't as meaningful as learning to stay centered in the face of adversity. Yet, many people would point to their photo in the paper as being a great accomplishment, but wouldn't necessarily think of staying centered as an accomplishment at all. Where are our priorities? If being peaceful and loving are among your primary goals, then why not redefine your most meaningful accomplishments as being those that support and measure qualities such as kindness and happiness? I think of my most meaningful accomplishments as stemming from inside myself. Was I kind to myself and others? Did I overreact to a challenge, or was I calm and collected? Am I happy? Did I hold on to anger, or was I able to let go and move on? Was I too stubborn? Did I forgive? These questions, and others like them, remind us that the true measure of our success comes not from what we do, but from who we are and how much love we have in our hearts. Rather than being consumed exclusively with external accomplishments, try putting more emphasis on what's really important. When you redefine what it means to achieve a meaningful accomplishment, it helps you to stay on your path.
Listen to your feelings. They are trying to tell you something.
You have at your disposal a foolproof guidance system to navigate you through life. This system, which consists solely of your own feelings, lets you know whether you're off track and headed toward unhappiness and conflict, or on track, headed toward peace of mind. Your feelings act as a barometer, letting you know what your internal weather is like. When you're not caught up in your thinking, taking things too seriously, your feelings will be generally positive. They will be affirming that you are using your thinking to your advantage. No mental adjustment needs to be made. When your experience of life is other than pleasant, when you're feeling angry, resentful, depressed, stressed out, frustrated, and so forth, your warning system of feelings kicks in like a red flag to remind you that you're off track, that it's time to ease up on your thinking. You've lost perspective. Mental adjustment does need to be made. You can think of your negative feelings in the same way you think of the warning lights on the dashboard of your car. When flashing, they let you know that it's time to ease up. Contrary to popular belief, negative feelings don't need to be studied and analyzed. When you analyze your negative feelings, you'll usually end up with more of them to contend with. The next time you're feeling bad, rather than getting stuck in analysis paralysis, wondering why you feel the way you do, see if instead you can use your feelings to guide you back in the direction towards serenity. Don't pretend that the negative feelings don't exist, but try to recognize that the reason you're feeling sad, angry, stressed, or whatever is that you are taking life too seriously. You are sweating the small stuff. Instead of rolling up your sleeves and fighting life, back off, take a few deep breaths, and relax. Remember, life isn't an emergency unless you make it so.
If someone throws you the ball, you don't have to catch it.
My best friend, Benjamin Shield, taught me this valuable lesson. Often, our inner struggles come from our tendency to jump on board someone else's problem. Someone throws you a concern, and you assume you must catch it and respond. For example, suppose you're really busy when a friend calls in a frantic tone and says, "My mother is driving me crazy. What should I do?" Rather than saying, "I'm really sorry, but I don't know what to suggest," you automatically catch the ball and try to solve the problem. Then later, you feel stressed or resentful that you are behind schedule and that everyone seems to be making demands on you. It's easy to lose sight of your willing participation in the dramas of your own life. Remembering that you don't have to catch the ball is a very effective way to reduce the stress in your life. When your friend calls, you can drop the ball, meaning you don't have to participate simply because he or she is attempting to lure you in. If you don't take the bait, the person will probably call someone else to see if they will become involved. This doesn't mean you never catch the ball, only that it's your choice to do so. Neither does this mean that you don't care about your friend or that you're crass or unhelpful. Developing a more tranquil outlook on life requires that we know our own limits and that we take responsibility for our part in the process. Most of us get balls thrown at us many times each day, at work, from our children, friends, neighbors, salespeople, even strangers. If I caught all the balls thrown in my direction, I would certainly go crazy, and I suspect that you would too. The key is to know when we're catching another ball so that we won't feel victimized, resentful, or overwhelmed. Even something terribly simple, like answering your phone when you're really too busy to talk, is a form of catching the ball. By answering the phone, you are willingly taking part in an interaction that you may not have the time, energy, or mindset for at the present time. By simply not answering the phone, you are taking responsibility for your own peace of mind. The same idea applies to being insulted or criticized. When someone throws an idea or comment in your direction, you can catch it and feel hurt, or you can drop it and go on with your day. The idea of not catching the ball simply because it's thrown to you is a powerful tool to explore. I hope you'll experiment with this one. You may find that you catch the ball a lot more than you think you do.
One more passing show.
This is a strategy that I have recently adopted into my own life. It's a subtle reminder that everything, the good and bad, pleasure and pain, approval and disapproval, achievements and mistakes, fame and shame, all come and go. Everything has a beginning and an ending, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Every experience you have ever had is over. Every thought you've ever had started and finished. Every emotion and mood you've ever experienced has been replaced by another. You've been happy, sad, jealous, depressed, angry, in love, shamed, proud, and every other conceivable human feeling. Where did they all go? The answer is, no one really knows. All we know is that, eventually, everything disappears into nothingness. Welcoming this truth into your life is the beginning of a liberating adventure. Our disappointment comes about in essentially two ways. When we're experiencing pleasure, we want it to last forever. It never does. Or, when we're experiencing pain, we want it to go away now. It usually doesn't. Unhappiness is the result of struggling against the natural flow of experience. It's enormously helpful to experiment with the awareness that life is just one thing after another. One present moment followed by another present moment. When something is happening that we enjoy, know that while it's wonderful to experience the happiness it brings, it will eventually be replaced by something else, a different type of moment. If that's okay with you, you'll feel peace even when the moment changes. And if you're experiencing some type of pain or displeasure, know that this too shall pass. Keeping this awareness close to your heart is a wonderful way to maintain your perspective even in the face of adversity. It's not always easy, but it is usually helpful.
Fill your life with love.
I don't know anyone who doesn't want a life filled with love. In order for this to happen, the effort must start within us. Rather than waiting for other people to provide the love we desire, we must be a vision and a source of love. We must tap into our own loving kindness in order to set an example for others to follow suit. It has been said that the shortest distance between two points is an intention. This is certainly true with regard to a life filled with love. The starting point or foundation of a life filled with love is the desire and commitment to be a source of love. Our attitude, choices, acts of kindness, and willingness to be the first to reach out will take us toward this goal. The next time you find yourself frustrated at the lack of love in your own life or at the lack of love in the world, try an experiment. Forget about the world and other people for a few minutes. Instead, look into your own heart. Can you become a source of greater love? Can you think loving thoughts for yourself and others? Can you extend these loving thoughts outward toward the rest of the world, even to people whom you feel don't deserve it? By opening your heart to the possibility of greater love, and by making yourself a source of love rather than getting love as a top priority, you will be taking an important step in getting the love you desire. You'll also discover something truly remarkable. The more love you give, the more love you will receive. As you put more emphasis on being a loving person, which is something you can control, and less emphasis on receiving love, which is something you can't control, you'll find that you have plenty of love in your life. Soon, you'll discover one of the greatest secrets in the world. Love is its own reward.
Realize the power of your own thoughts.
If you were to become aware of only one mental dynamic, the most important one to know about would be the relationship between your thinking and the way you feel. It's important to realize that you are constantly thinking. Don't be fooled into believing that you are already aware of this fact. Think for a moment about your breathing. Until this moment, when you were listening to this sentence, you had certainly lost sight of the fact that you were doing it. The truth is, unless you are out of breath, you simply forget that it's occurring. Thinking works in the same way. Because you're always doing it, it's easy to forget that it's happening, and it becomes invisible to you. Unlike breathing, however, forgetting that you are thinking can cause some serious problems in your life, such as unhappiness, anger, inner conflicts, and stress. The reason this is true is that your thinking will always come back to you as a feeling. There is a point-to-point relationship. Try getting angry without first having angry thoughts. Okay, now try feeling stressed out without first having stressful thoughts, or sad without sad thoughts, or jealous without thoughts of jealousy. You can't do it. It's impossible. The truth is, in order to experience a feeling, you must first have a thought that produces that feeling. Unhappiness doesn't and can't exist on its own. Unhappiness is the feeling that accompanies negative thinking about your life. In the absence of that thinking, the unhappiness or stress or jealousy can't exist. There is nothing to hold your negative feelings in place other than your own thinking. The next time you're feeling upset, notice your thinking. It will be negative. Remind yourself that it's your thinking that is negative, not your life. This simple awareness will be the first step in putting you back on the path toward happiness. It takes practice, but you can get to the point where you treat your negative thoughts in much the same way you would treat flies at a picnic. You shoo them away and get on with your day.
Give up on the idea that more is better.
We live in the most affluent culture the world has ever seen. Estimates are that although we have only 6% of the world's population in America, we use almost half of the natural resources. It seems to me that if more were actually better, we would live in the happiest, most satisfied culture of all time. But we don't. Not even close. In fact, we live in one of the most dissatisfied cultures on record. It's not that having a lot of things is bad, wrong, or harmful in and of itself, only that the desire to have more and more and more is insatiable. As long as you think more is better, you'll never be satisfied. As soon as we get something or achieve something, most of us simply go on to the next thing immediately. This squelches our appreciation for life and for our many blessings. I know a man, for example, who bought a beautiful home in a nice area. He was happy until the day after he moved in. Then the thrill was gone. Immediately, he wished he'd bought a bigger, nicer home. His more is better thinking wouldn't allow him to enjoy his new home even for a day. Sadly, he is not unique. To varying degrees, we're all like that. It's gotten to the point that when the Dalai Lama won the Nobel Prize for Peace in 1989, one of the first questions he received from a reporter was, "What's next?" It seems that whatever we do, buy a home or a car, eat a meal, find a partner, purchase some clothes, even win a prestigious honor, it's never enough. The trick in overcoming this insidious tendency is to convince yourself that more isn't better and that the problem doesn't lie in what you don't have, but in the longing for more. Learning to be satisfied doesn't mean you can't, don't, or shouldn't ever want more than you have, only that your happiness isn't contingent on it. You can learn to be happy with what you have by becoming more present moment oriented, by not focusing so much on what you want. As thoughts of what would make your life better enter your mind, gently remind yourself that, even if you got what you think you want, you wouldn't be one bit more satisfied because the same mindset that wants more now would want more then. Develop a new appreciation for the blessings you already enjoy. See your life freshly, as if for the first time. As you develop this new awareness, you'll find that as new possessions or accomplishments enter your life, your level of appreciation will be heightened. An excellent measure of happiness is the differential between what you have and what you want. You can spend your lifetime wanting more, always chasing happiness, or you can simply decide to consciously want less. This latter strategy is infinitely easier and more fulfilling.
Keep asking yourself, what's really important?
It's easy to get lost and overwhelmed in the chaos, responsibilities, and goals of life. Once overwhelmed, it's tempting to forget about and postpone that which is most near and dear to your heart. I found that it's helpful to keep asking myself, what's really important? As part of my early morning routine, I take a few seconds to ask myself this question. Reminding myself of what's really important helps me keep my priorities straight. It reminds me that, despite my multitude of responsibilities, I have a choice of what is most important in my life and where I put my greatest amount of energy, being available for my wife and children, writing, practicing my inner work, and so forth. Despite the appearance of being overly simplistic, I have found this strategy to be immensely helpful in keeping me on track. When I take a few moments to remind myself of what's really important, I find that I'm more present moment oriented, in less of a hurry, and that being right loses its appeal. Conversely, when I forget to remind myself of what's really important, I find that I can quickly lose sight of my priorities and, once again, get lost in my own busyness. I'll rush out the door, work late, lose my patience, skip my exercise, and do other things that are in conflict with the goals of my life. If you regularly take a minute to check in with yourself, to ask yourself what's really important, you may find that some of the choices you are making are in conflict with your own stated goals. This strategy can help you align your actions with your goals and encourage you to make more conscious, loving decisions.
Trust your intuitive heart.
How often have you said to yourself, after the fact, "I knew I should have done that"? How often do you intuitively know something but allow yourself to think yourself out of it? Trusting your intuitive heart means listening to and trusting that quiet inner voice that knows what it is you need to do, what actions need to be taken, or changes need to be made in your life. Many of us don't listen to our intuitive heart for fear that we couldn't possibly know something without thinking it through, or for fear that legitimate answers could possibly be so obvious. We say things to ourselves like, "That couldn't possibly be right," or "I couldn't possibly do that." And as soon as we allow our thinking mind to enter into the picture, we think ourselves out of it. We then argue for our limitations, and they become ours. If you can overcome your fear that your intuitive heart will give you incorrect answers, if you can learn to trust it, your life will become the magical adventure it was meant to be. Trusting your intuitive heart is like removing the barriers to enjoyment and wisdom. It's the way to open your eyes and your heart to your greatest source of wisdom and grace. If you're unfamiliar with trusting your intuition, start by setting aside a little quiet time to clear your mind and listen. Ignore and dismiss any habitual, self-defeating thoughts that enter your mind and pay attention only to the calm thoughts that begin to surface. If you find that unusual yet loving thoughts are appearing in your mind, take note of them and take action. If, for example, you get the message to write or call someone you love, go ahead and do it. If your intuitive heart says you need to slow down or take more time for yourself, try to make it happen. If you're reminded of a habit that needs attention, pay attention. You'll find that when your intuition gives you messages and you respond with action, you'll often be rewarded with positive, loving experiences. Start trusting your intuitive heart today, and you'll see a world of difference in your life.
Be open to what is.
One of the most basic spiritual principles in many philosophies is the idea of opening your heart to what is, instead of insisting that life be a certain way. This idea is so important because much of our internal struggle stems from our desire to control life, to insist that it be different than it actually is. But life isn't always the way we would like it to be. It simply is the way it is. The greater our surrender to the truth of the moment, the greater will be our peace of mind. When we have preconceived ideas about the way life should be, they interfere with our opportunity to enjoy or learn from the present moment. This prevents us from honoring what we are going through, which may be an opportunity for great awakening. Rather than reacting to a child's complaining or your spouse's disapproval, try opening your heart and accepting the moment for what it is. Make it okay that they aren't acting exactly the way you would like them to. Or, if a project you have been working on is rejected, instead of feeling defeated, see if you can say to yourself, "Ah, rejection. Next time, I'll get it approved." Take a deep breath and soften your response. You open your heart in these ways not to pretend that you enjoy complaints, disapproval, or failure, but to transcend them, to make it all right with you that life isn't performing the way you planned. If you can learn to open your heart in the midst of the difficulties of daily life, you will soon find that many of the things that have always bothered you will cease to be concerns. Your perspective will deepen. When you fight that which you struggle with, life can be quite a battle, almost like a ping pong game where you are the ball. But when you surrender to the moment, accept what is going on, make it okay, more peaceful feelings will begin to emerge. Try this technique on some of the little challenges you face. Gradually, you'll be able to extend the same awareness to bigger things. This is a truly powerful way to live.
Mind your own business.
It's tough enough trying to create a life of serenity when dealing with your own mental tendencies, issues, real-life problems, habits, and the contradictions and complexities of life. But when you feel compelled to deal with other people's issues, your goal of becoming more peaceful becomes all but impossible. How often do you find yourself saying things like, "I wouldn't do that if I were her," or "I can't believe he did that," or "What is she thinking about?" How often are you frustrated, bothered, annoyed, or concerned about things that you not only cannot control or be of actual help with, but are also none of your business? This is not a prescription to avoid being of help to people. Rather, it's about knowing when to help and when to leave something alone. I used to be the type of person who would jump in and try to solve a problem without being asked. Not only did my efforts prove fruitless, they were also almost always unappreciated and sometimes even resented. Since recovering from my need to be overly involved, my life has become much simpler. And now that I'm not butting in where I'm not wanted, I'm far more available to be of help when I am asked or truly needed. Minding your own business goes far beyond simply avoiding the temptation to try to solve other people's problems. It also includes eavesdropping, gossiping, talking behind other people's backs, and analyzing or trying to figure out other people. One of the major reasons most of us focus.
Look for the extraordinary in the ordinary.
I heard a story about two workers who were approached by a reporter. The reporter asked the first worker, "What are you doing?" His response was to complain that he was virtually a slave, an underpaid bricklayer who spent his days wasting his time placing bricks on top of one another. The reporter asked the second worker the same question. His response, however, was quite different. "I'm the luckiest person in the world," he said. "I get to be a part of important and beautiful pieces of architecture. I help turn simple pieces of brick into exquisite masterpieces." They were both right. The truth is, we see in life what we want to see. If you search for ugliness, you'll find plenty of it. If you want to find fault with other people, your career, or the world in general, you'll certainly be able to do so. But the opposite is also true. If you look for the extraordinary in the ordinary, you can train yourself to see it. This bricklayer sees cathedrals within pieces of brick. The question is, can you? Can you see the extraordinary synchronicity that exists in our world? The perfection of the universe in action? The extraordinary beauty of nature? The incredible miracle of human life? To me, it's all a matter of intention. There is so much to be grateful for, so much to be in awe about. Life is precious and extraordinary. Put your attention on this fact, and little, ordinary things will take on a whole new meaning.
Schedule time for your inner work.
In the field of financial planning, there is a universally accepted principle that it's critical to pay yourself first before you pay your other bills, to think of yourself as a creditor. The rationale for this financial wisdom is that if you wait to put money into savings until after everybody else is paid, there will be nothing left for you. The result is that you'll keep postponing your savings plan until it's too late to do anything about it. But, lo and behold, if you pay yourself first, somehow there will be just enough to pay everyone else too. The identical principle is critical to implement into your program of spiritual practice. If you wait until all your chores, responsibilities, and everything else is done before you get started, it will never happen. Guaranteed. I have found that scheduling a little time each day, as if it were an actual appointment, is the only way to ensure that you will take some time for yourself. You might become an early riser, for example, and schedule 1 hour that is reserved for reading, praying, reflecting, meditating, yoga, exercise, or however you want to use the time. How you choose to use the time is up to you. The important thing is that you do schedule the time and that you stick to it. I had a client who actually hired a babysitter on a regular basis to ensure that she had the chance to do the things she felt she needed to do. Today, more than a year later, her efforts have paid enormous dividends. She's happier than she ever thought possible. She told me that there was a time that she never would have imagined hiring a babysitter to ensure this type of quality time for herself. Now that she has done it, she can't imagine not doing it. If you set your mind to it, you can find the time you need.
Live this day as if it were your last. It might be.
When are you going to die? In 50 years? 20? 10? 5? Today? Last time I checked, no one had told me. I often wonder, when listening to the news, did the person who died in the auto accident on his way home from work remember to tell his family how much he loved them? Did he live well? Did he love well? Perhaps the only thing that is certain is that he still had things in his in-basket that weren't yet done. The truth is, none of us has any idea how long we have to live. Sadly, however, we act as if we're going to live forever. We postpone the things that deep down we know we want to do. Telling the people we love how much we care, spending time alone, visiting a good friend, taking that beautiful hike, running a marathon, writing a heartfelt letter, going fishing with your daughter, learning to meditate, becoming a better listener, and on and on. We come up with elaborate and sophisticated rationales to justify our actions and end up spending most of our time and energy doing things that aren't all that important. We argue for our limitations, and they become our limitations. I felt it appropriate to end this audiobook by suggesting that you live each day as if it were your last on this earth. I suggest this not as a prescription to be reckless or to abandon your responsibilities, but to remind you of how precious life really is. A friend of mine once said, "Life is too important to take too seriously." 10 years later, I know he was right. I hope this audiobook has been and will continue to be helpful to you. Please don't forget the most basic strategy of all. Don't sweat the small stuff. I will end this audiobook by sincerely saying that I wish you well. Treasure yourself.
Don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. Simple Ways to Keep the Little Things from Taking Over Your Life was written and read by Richard Carlson, Ph.D. It was recorded at Russian Hill Recording in San Francisco, California. Direction, editing, and post-production by Lisa Bainey. The associate producer was Sally Hurst. Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and It's All Small Stuff was produced by Florence Barreau Adams. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, Dr. Richard Carlson's Don't Worry, Make Money. Don't sweat the small stuff with your family. Don't sweat the small stuff at work. And don't sweat the small stuff in love.